This is Creating Windows Not Bars, a monthly show on Justice Radio on WMPG with your host, Linda Small. And today we are talking with Doug Dunbar, a member of No Penobscot County Jail Expansion, and Brian Pittman, an incoming assistant professor at Landberg University in South Carolina. And we're going to talk about what's happening in our jails in Maine and the money that we spend on new construction. But first, a little bit about your host. I'm Linda Small, and I work as a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition, and I'm the executive director of Reentry Sisters. And we're an organization that specializes in helping women and girls come home from prison. And you can learn more about our organization on our website, reentrysisters.org. So today we want to bring some public awareness to Maine's jails, particularly what's happening in Penobscot County and its impact on people, families, and communities, and how much of our taxpayer dollars are going into that jail system and the return on our investment in terms of public safety and creating healthy communities. So we're going to begin with an introduction. So hi, Doug, welcome, and thanks so much for being here with us today. Doug Kindleys, tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to this particular part of social justice work.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks for all that you do. You do much good. And I'm fortunate that I know many people who have been incarcerated who are doing wonderful, wonderful things. I paid very little attention to who was in our jails and prisons and how they were treated, how long they were there, what happened when they were released, until it became personal for me. I worked in government. I care about government. I spent 3 decades working in the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, the governor's office in Maine. I was Maine's chief deputy secretary of state. I was former Governor John Baldacci's press secretary for about 10 years. And again, I really care about government. That career ended when I went to jail in October of 2017. I self-medicated with alcohol for 16 years. Right after 9/11, I started drinking when I was working on Capitol Hill. And my lifelong OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, went completely out of control. And I had never been able to tell anyone about that because of fear and stigma. It was a very real thing. So what I did is I turned to alcohol. It was a way to cope. It was my medicine. But years of self-medicating turned into alcoholism and led to poor decision-making, and I ended up in jail for 4.5 months. And it was the most fascinating experience of my life. I'm so glad that happened to me because it opened my eyes to so many injustices and so many failures of our government and our society and all of us, really. So since I got out of jail in March of 2018, my mission in life has turned largely to trying to change systems, which is very difficult, and help individuals who are going through a similar experience or much worse. I was treated reasonably well, but lots of people are not, or they come out of jail or prison, oftentimes with very little support, and we set them up for failure, frankly. That's enough out of me, but thank you for letting me be here.
Yes, of course, Doug. Thank you. And hey, Brian, can you tell us, our listeners, a little bit about you and what got you interested in this Penobscot County jail situation?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Also, Linda, I moved to Bangor, Maine in 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, and about 3 months after one of the proposed jail plans went out to the public, I was looking for ways to get involved in the community and came across Needlepoint Sanctuary, and some of the people at the time overlapped with people that were involved in the Penobscot jail expansion. And so while I lived in Maine, I moved last summer. I worked with organizations that kind of revolved around these issues. So Needlepoint Sanctuary with drug use and harm reduction, Greater Bangor Houseless Collective around homelessness, and No Penobscot County Jail expansion with the county jail.
Thank you both. Let's get into what's really happening behind your website, No Penobscot County Jail. Why is that such a bad thing? And why should people care about what's going on there? Doug, do you want to start off with that?
Sure. I spent 10 weeks, about 1,700 hours, if you're keeping track, in Penobscot County Jail. I care about the people who end up there deeply. You know, for a long time on a daily basis, and certainly now every few days or more often, I think about the people who are in that building. It's an old building. A part of it's a bit newer. There were some renovations and I think an expansion, but renovations anyway, in the 1980s. But the building is old. But the question is, what is best for not only the people who end up in the jail, but for society? So Penobscot County is considering, and has been for several years, building a new enormous jail, almost doubling the size of the jail, the capacity, and spending, I'm guessing, but this won't be far off, maybe $100 million plus years and years, maybe decades of interest payments after that. So the question is that a good use of resources? And I think we know if you do the research, if you do some homework, you'll see that our systems are not working. Our recidivism rate is too high. People revolve in and out of our jails, in and out, because we don't solve problems. We build bigger buildings to hold more people, but we don't solve problems. That $100 million in Penobscot County that would go to that building, that's not for to hire psychiatrists or other clinicians or to create wonderful programming. That's just for bars and bricks and barbed wire, just to build a building. And $100 million used in other ways in society and communities on housing and substance use disorder, mental illness, to help people experience those things, that would make an enormous difference, not a building.
So I want to follow up a little bit, Doug, on something that you said. You think about the people in that building every day. Can you enlighten our listeners? Aren't those people who are supposed to be in jail to protect the public? I mean, who are these people in the Penobscot County Jail?
When I was in jail, I wanted to bail so many people out. They were there on relatively minor charges. I was in a cell or a little block with someone who had shoplifted. And because he lived in the woods, loved living in the woods, was developmentally delayed or had some limitations, clearly, he acted much younger than his age, and he would shoplift to basically survive. And he was there for months, and his bail was $160. In fact, his bail, I think, was $100. The $60, I believe, was the fee you have to pay. I wanted to bail him out and so many other people. You know, one change to our system that would ensure that we don't need a bigger building is to have bail reform. There are places and programs where you can turn and see that people can be bailed out or not have bail and show up to court. Oftentimes what helps are reminders that go to court and, you know, some support so that people end up in court, not keeping them in jail. That does a disservice because it doesn't take long once you're in jail to lose a job if you have it, to lose an apartment if you have it, to lose pet, maybe you have a pet, to lose supports, and so on. So being in jail can be very detrimental, even for a short period of time. But yet, too many people there for too long on relatively minor charges. We could handle this much, much differently.
Thank you, Doug.
And to kind of build on that a little bit too, Linda, as well. And it's just to remind folks as well that jails are housing people who have not been charged, for the most part, have not been convicted of the crimes that they are in jail for. Sometimes you even have people who are in jails on various probation violations, whether it could be, and those probation violations or drug court violations or whatever they might be things that are completely illegal for you and I to, or for someone like me who's never been incarcerated to do. And so those are things to keep in mind as well, is that these people have not been convicted. Most of the people in jails have not been convicted of the crime that they are in accused for. And so that's just something else to keep in mind, particularly as pretrial detention has increased over the last, I believe, 30 years, not just in Penobscot County, but across the state of Maine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For that.
Can I just
Please.
Can I just emphasize, sorry, that is so important. I was completely guilty, but you know, Brian is so right, and I'm glad he brought this up. Jails primarily these days hold people who are simply awaiting their day in court. They've not been found guilty, and yet we treat them so poorly as if they had committed the worst crime in the world, and some of them are completely innocent. Others are guilty of something, perhaps, but maybe not the six charges that are awaiting them when they do get their day in court. And many of them serve more time waiting for their day in court than they would have spent in jail if they had gotten to a court in a reasonable period of time and then, say, been sentenced to 30 days in jail or 60 days in jail. Many of them spend much more time than that just waiting for their day in court. Now, so we need to address that system, not build bigger buildings to hold more people who have to wait way too long to have their day in court. We need big changes. And this is a time to do it in Penobscot County, to draw a line and say, no, we're not going to keep eating a system that has such bad results. That's not good government. That's not good for society. That's not good for safety.
Thank you both. We'll get to your book chapter in a minute, Brian, but I had pulled some very interesting statistics that you're talking about here, and that the ACLU says that the vast majority of Maine jails, over 70%, and in two jails, over 80% of the people in those jails are exactly what you said. They have been convicted of anything. They're just waiting for their time to have justice for themselves and their families, which is obviously a giant waste of taxpayer dollars. And speaking of taxpayer dollars, Brian, Doug mentioned $100 million price tag just for brick and mortar. So can you talk to our listeners a little bit, and how does this estimate that Penobscot County Jail needs to double its bed space, how does that work? And is this estimate reasonable, or what's wrong with those projections as well?
Yeah, so the projections, some of the early projections of the doubling of jail size actually came from a working group that the county put on back, I believe, I want to say it was 2017, and the report might have come out in 2018. And they estimated that the jail size would double, but they based it on the jail size increasing over the previous 20 years, which again, did not account for the increase in pretrial detention that had taken place since that point, did not account for the role of the war on drugs, which, just to be clear, has not ended, did not account for homelessness that has increased in the last few years. And of course, we know that unhoused people are targeted by the state, by the criminal legal system. They based it just merely based on the previous 20-year projections, not accounting for the context that surrounded why those numbers had increased. The people on that committee were also traditional municipal and county bureaucrats. I think there's one who's on city council who will be actually who's running for county commissioner this November that was on that committee. They were all appointed by county commissioners who had stated their desire the previous years to in advocating for an increased jail. And so, of course, there's a bias that goes into play there. And so that's part of where those projections came from. Meanwhile, what we know, or at least what the police departments in Penobscot County have reported to the UCR, is that the Uniform Crime Report to the FBI, which keeps track of police reports to crime. I won't necessarily say it keeps track of crime, but it's police reporting of criminal activity in the area. And crime rates in Penobscot County have decreased. I want to say, Doug, you remember if it was 50% in over 10 years? And so even by their own numbers, what they are saying is the problem has decreased. So there's a number of different factors there, but a lot of it was based on some working group. And of course, there are all these other potential ties that you could dig deeper into, but a lot of it was to that working group.
You are listening to Justice Radio with your host, Linda Small. And today we're talking with Doug Dunbar and Brian Pittman of No Penobscot County Jail Expansion. Back to you for a minute, Brian. You touched on a little bit this larger issue of how capitalism plays a significant role in the expansion of carceral systems, including this Penobscot County Jail project. And so if we look at a snapshot of this situation in Allen County, Indiana, where an architectural firm called Elevatus had designed a jail for Indiana and in several other states. So this architectural firm produces these feasibility studies that have sort of fuzzy data behind them. And then they go ahead and they end up getting awarded contracts to design these jails. So can you talk a little bit about this blatant conflict of interest, and is this happening in Maine as well?
There was an article in The Intercept that came out, I want to say a few weeks ago, about the role that architectural firms are playing in jail expansion and how counties, cities, municipalities are seeking out these architectural firms to assess the current jail, and then what is happening in some of these cases, the architectural firm recommends a new jail, and then they propose to be the ones to build the jail, and then are awarded to build the jail. That, to my knowledge, did not happen yet with Penobscot County. I don't think they instituted an architectural firm to assess the current validity of the jail, but they have gotten, I think, one organization that did a culture study that came back and basically said they need a new jail was the Moss Group. I tried to do a little bit of digging on them, but couldn't find too much overlap between them and folks involved in Maine. But there is an issue, at least in some municipalities nationwide. I believe one of the architectural firms discussed in that piece was based in Portland, Maine. But beyond that, I can't speak to whether or not that has happened specifically in Maine. There have been some questionable ties in terms of one county commissioner voting to hire someone that lobbied on his behalf to also lobby behalf of the jail. And that was going to be a lump sum amount of money to pay for that. But nothing as egregious as what that article talks about in The Intercept, to my knowledge.
Well, it does sound like overall it's a money-making endeavor, right? And not about people, but more about maybe creating jobs or lining people's pockets, whether they're the actual builders or the architects or whatever is going on behind the scenes of this particular Penobscot County jail, because it sounds like we don't need it. If crime is down 50%, why are we creating twice as many beds? And the other thing, I want to get back to you, Doug, for a minute, because you talked about the stigma and the fear behind substance use disorder. And most surveys say that, you know, over 70% of the incarcerated folks do have either a mental health issue or a substance use disorder. And so one of the things that Penobscot County Jail is telling the public is that this is a good thing. This is a helpful thing. This is a treatment center. Can you speak to that?
In terms of the misunderstanding, I think that so many people have, good, caring people who want safer communities and want people to be well, have the misunderstanding that jails can be places of treatment and wellness and recovery. I gotta tell you, you don't need to be a psychiatrist. You just need to spend some time in jail to understand that that is a rare thing. When someone goes to jail, gets out, and is much better and stays better. Because you're treated so poorly, even if you had an hour a day with the best psychiatrist in the world and had the best medication if you need medication, and the other 23 hours a day, and perhaps you're there for 6 months, you're treated so poorly and you're fed terrible food in many cases. And you sleep on basically a metal slat with a tiny, tiny mattress. The point is, you could have the best treatment provider in the world, but the rest of the time you're locked in a cage, you're sleeping on a metal frame, you're treated oftentimes like an animal. You're not going to get well by and large, and many people get worse. We have to stop thinking about new buildings as somehow being treatment centers. No, they are not. Put that money into the community.
Thank you, Doug. Brian, do you want to talk a little bit about who or what is at the root of this misinformation campaign, and why is that jails are good for people?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. I think some of it is that there's a large segment of the population that doesn't necessarily believe jails are good or bad per se, but they believe jails are housing people that deserve to be there. And so, you know, crime is a very political issue. I'm sure we'll see it in a couple of days on the national scale when we have these two presidential candidates holding themselves up to debate each other. You know, crime is a prominent issue in the political discourse right now. There's a lot of backlash to what happened in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd and pushback against the criminal legal system. And that is now kind of reverberating back to say, well, we need more police, we need more prisons, because that's what prevents crime, when we know that police and prisons do not prevent crime. There's a belief, there's a deep belief, and a lot of that is because of how the media in particular portrays the criminal justice system as working, just being kind of a few bad apples. So there's a lot that goes into it. People believe that if we just force people to be treated for their substance use addiction, we're doing what's good for them, when we know that the harm reduction approach of meeting people where they are is much more beneficial. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a mix of things, but crime in particular is something, it's this boogeyman that has been around and used politically for at least the last 60 years, probably going back even further. And that causes a lot of misunderstandings about these issues. And it comes around to when we think about homelessness, a lot of people will think about homelessness and think, oh, well, these people are committing crime. And we know that unhoused people are more likely to be the victims of criminal activity than they are the perpetrators. And so there's a lot of misunderstandings and misperceptions. The war on drugs certainly didn't help. We're pushing back against all the narratives of the 1970s, 1980s in regards to the war on drugs. There's a lot of propaganda that has to be countered. And unfortunately, that is a tall task.
Right. And so are you saying that we can't equate with locking a bunch of people up with public safety?
Absolutely not. In fact, it harms public safety. When you think about a number of things, including, I think there's data to show that public health gets worse when you're locking people up. In Penobscot County, for example, I believe they had at least three reported COVID-19 outbreaks. That, of course, doesn't help the community when people get out, or of course, you know, you have the officers that are being around these people that are then going out in the community and spreading whatever they're coming across, because jails are hotbeds for disease, not just COVID-19, but others as well. When people get out, you know, especially if they haven't had drug treatment or just went straight withdrawal because they didn't have access to drug treatment, which is its own kind of tricky, murky issue. But let's say they did not, and then they go back to drugs, you've put that person at risk of dying because they have, you know, detoxed from their drugs. They don't have the same tolerance as they had before, and their risk of overdosing significantly increases after they're released from jail. So no, it is absolutely not. It does not help with public safety. And as Doug already mentioned, you know, people lose their jobs, they lose their housing, they lose those relationships that they've developed. It really can turn your life upside down and disconnect you from the community further, which of course we know has some relationship to crime, whatever we think that means.
Yeah, and Linda, you know, years after I left, I've been out of jail more than 6 years now, but I still go occasionally to the list of people who are residents of the jail, who are inmates. I prefer the word resident, but the people who are living there, and I still recognize names because we're harming people and they're going out and they're doing something that lands them back in jail. And again, as I said, as Brian said, it doesn't take very long before you lose your supports on the outside. And if you get out, frankly, and you weren't suffering from mental illness before you went in, or your mental health wasn't so bad, when you get out and you've lost your job, your apartment, your pet, your support system, your possessions, you're going to have some mental health problems then, or they're going to get worse. It is a vicious cycle. We don't solve problems. And no, it doesn't help public safety. We see the recidivism rate. And so we know the system is not working, or some will argue it is working the way it was supposed to, because it was meant to particularly sort of capture and harm and house people of color and others. But as a person who cares about government, I can say this is the worst government system, the criminal legal system, that I've ever encountered in my life.
Thank
and
you.
Just to
Thank
elaborate a little bit further, sorry. Yeah, jails are a traumatic place, and that applies to Penobscot County as well. There's been a number of people since 2018, 2019 that have died in jail, in Penobscot mm-hmm. County Jail in particular, but across all jails in Maine. In 2018, there was one of the higher up officers, I believe, that had a sexual harassment scandal that not just impacted people behind bars, but also impacted community members who were going into the jail to try and do good things. There have been other sexual harassment things that have happened. I believe the current county, the current jail administrator settled a lawsuit for such. There's the sexual violence in general that goes into what happens at jails and prisons, in particular when you're thinking about, which I can't speak to whether Penobscot County Jail does this, but strip searches and they're just a traumatic, it's a traumatic place. And to expect people to come out of that traumatic place feeling better is naive at best.
Thank you both. It sounds like there's no oversight. And one of the ways that we can create some oversight is by becoming informed citizens. So one last question for each of you. Do you have suggestions for folks listening about how they can become involved in your work, help out with the No Expansion Penobscot County Jail, or become involved in their own county jail, wherever that is in whatever county the listener is at today? So for each of you, go ahead.
Thank you. It's so important for people to get involved. Again, I wasn't involved until it became personal. So I'm always grateful for people who do get involved, if they even if they haven't had some personal experience or a family member. You certainly can go to our website. You can just Google No Penobscot County Jail Expansion, and you'll find us. We meet every 3 weeks, which is a little bit different than a lot of organizations. We meet every 3 weeks on a Sunday. And just people, if people have any interest at all, any concern, want to draw the line somewhere and say, no, this system is not working well. It's not treating people well. It's not enhancing public safety. Get involved. Make Penobscot County the place where we draw the line and say, enough, we're going to go in a different direction. Yeah, I really encourage people, get involved, because we are mistreating so many people who are suffering from mental health challenges, substance use disorder, which is a mental health issue. And a lot of people who are unhoused or in desperate poverty, we are mistreating them. And also go and look at the culture study, or contact us and we'll send it to you. The culture study that Brian mentioned of Penobscot County Jail. The problem is not the building. The problem is the disease culture in the building. And as Brian referenced, there was an enormous scandal, sexual harassment scandal, that implicated a number of people in the building. And a lot of people are still there. There are so many problems at Penobscot County Jail, but it's not the building. It's the culture. It's the oversight or lack of it. It's the lack of supervision and so on.
Thank you, Doug. Brian?
Yeah, just if you want to get involved with Penobscot County's effort, certainly everything Doug said. If you've had a jail expansion effort going on in your area, look around, see what you can find. There might be organizations that are already working against that, that might overlap with harm reduction and drug users. It might overlap with homelessness, but I imagine there are folks pushing back against that narrative. And of course, to the extent that you're able, which of course can be very tedious. And if you've ever watched a county commissioner's or city council meeting, it's not very fun for most people, but getting involved, looking around, seeing what your city councilors are talking about, seeing what your county commissioners are talking about, even if it's just going back and reading the notes or reading the agenda, seeing what they're looking for. You'll find a lot of information on there, particularly for your counties, because your counties, for the most part, have jurisdiction over your jails. And most of what the counties across the country do now is have oversight of jails and police and their sheriff deputies. And that's about majority of their work. So definitely keep an eye out and organize with other folks.
That's great. Thank you, Doug and Brian, for sharing the incredible work that you're doing to create public awareness about what's going on at our local jails. So in coming shows, we're going to explore the ideas of public safety, the unique stigma that justice-impacted women face, and the experiences and struggles of returning citizens to create meaningful and productive lives. Visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode of our series.